You are listening to the K1's Charitable Hearts Podcast with your hosts, Taylor
and Colin. Join us in our journey to spread kindness, knowledge, personal education, business practices, and charitable advances with others.
We hope this information inspires you and motivates you to give and to help others, and most importantly, put kindness first.
On today's episode, we're sitting here with Lisa Tillman and Dan Ward with RIFA here in Jackson. And if y'all would want to go into a little description of what y'all's roles are here.
Sure. So again, my name is Lisa Tillman. I'm the executive director here at RIFA, and I have been a part of this amazing organization since January 2009. So I'm just starting my 12th year.
And my name is Dan Ward. I'm the volunteer coordinator here. I was a kitchen manager for 6.5 years, and I started October the 6th of 2008.
Well, earlier when we were talking that RIFA is about to celebrate one of its birthdays.
Right, 43 and years.
43 years of serving the Jackson community. Mm-hmm. That's impressive.
Very.
Can you go into detail about what RIFA is?
Sure.
Just a broad question, and then
sure,
we'll get down.
So RIFA stands for Regional Interfaith Association. So we are a faith-based social services nonprofit organization that has been a part of this community for many, many years. So we're very much a part of the fabric of Jackson. Just a brief little history. So back in 1976, there were some folks that came over from East Tennessee that represented an organization called TAC. It doesn't exist anymore, but TAC stood for Tennessee Association of Churches. So they were doing some work in East Tennessee, came over to West Tennessee, met with some local community leaders, church leaders, civic leaders, and decided ultimately that forming an organization such as RIFA would be a more effective way to meet the needs of people in need in the community. So we were actually modeled after MIFA in Memphis. But today, many years later, we look a whole lot more like a junior version, little sister to Mid-South Food Bank. In the early years, what the organization did was kind of look around, survey the community, identify needs in the community, collect resources, and then start some sort of program or ministry to meet those needs. So it looked very different in the early years. And what a lot of people don't know is that there are many organizations that are familiar to us that were kind of birthed at RIFA. So for example, our West Tennessee Farmers Market was started at RIFA. It actually started in the parking lot of the old West Jackson Baptist Church, which is right down the road from here, but is no more. West Tennessee Hospice got its beginnings here. Our local Habitat for Humanity was birthed here. So like I said, they looked around and saw the needs and then started some sort of program or ministry. Today, our focus is all about fighting hunger, and you saw that on the tour today. We've got a lot of different programs and ministries that are solely focused on fighting hunger in our community. So that's what we're all about today.
Well, as far as like, How did you get involved?
Sure.
What led you to start working here? And then we'll follow up with you.
Okay. So like I told you, I listened to Donna Vick's podcast, and there's a lot of similarities between her story and mine. I worked for almost 10 years as the executive director of the Jackson Oaks, which is a senior living community here in Jackson, and loved my work, but it's a 24/7 type thing. I mean, we basically took care of senior citizens, and they lived, in that building. So I guess you would say I kind of got a little bit of burnout after about 10 years, and I prayed to God, and I said, you know, God, I'd really like a job where I can go in at 8, leave at 5, you know, turn the lights off, shut the door, and not get phone calls in the middle of the night because, you know, somebody's fallen or something's happened.
You're still waiting for that, right?
No. God gave me exactly what I asked for. And I went to work for an organization, a nonprofit called Easter Seals. And
I'm familiar with that.
Okay. So this was a newly created position. And I was able to go in at 8 and leave at 5 or whatever the hours were and shut the door. And that was fine. And I did that for about a year. But what I found after about a year is that I wasn't really feeling very challenged in that work. And so I went back to God and I said, okay, I don't know that this is really a good fit for me. And so I began to think about looking for some other job. And at about that same time, we are members of Love and Truth Church. And about that same season of time, my daughter, who I think was 10 at the time, and I had just gone on our very first mission trip to Costa Rica and fell in love with the project that we went to be a part of, fell in love with the work, and fell in love with the idea of being doing foreign missions work. But then I went, I just don't know how that's going to work. You know, that's not my husband's passion. You know, I felt like I'm a middle-aged woman with a house in the suburbs, and I wasn't quite sure how that was going to play out. But still, it was something that was like, you know, I was wrestling with. And so we came back from that trip, and my daughter, who again was 10 years old at the time, had spent the night at her best friend's house, and I went to go pick her up, and her friend's grandmother, not knowing that I did not feel like the job I had was a good fit for me, she had no idea I was thinking about looking for another job, came out to the car and said, for whatever reason, Lisa, did you know that Donna Vickers, who was the director of RIFA at the time, is going to be retiring, and I think that job would be a good fit for you? She had no idea that I was looking for another job. I knew kind of what RIFA was, but not really. And I got out of the car, went inside. She pulled the article up online. I read the article, and I was like, yeah, maybe that could be a good fit for me. Needed to update my resume, and had just done that when I got called in to Easter Seals, and they laid me off from my job.
Wow.
Yeah, this was the week before Thanksgiving. And so I went, okay, I don't have a job. It's the holiday season. Nobody really hires during the holidays. They're all focused on Thanksgiving and Christmas. And I have one resume out there, Lord. Okay. I'm going to lean in here. Yeah. And I mean, I need to work. Well, a couple weeks later, I got a call from Donna Vickers, the director of RIFA, and she called me in for an interview. Wow. Okay. The only resume I had out there. So I went into the old location and I sat down, and she said, do you mind waiting for just a minute? One of our board members is going to be joining us for the interview. And he said he knows you. And I said, really, who is that? And she said, Mr. James Allison, who I did know because Mr. James Allison's mother lived at the Jackson Oaks. Wow. So we had that connection. So it made that first interview a lot less, you know, I was a lot less nervous. Yes. And so we did that interview, and then I think I interviewed with the entire board of directors, which was like 25 people that I had to sit in front of, and they selected me to be the new director of RIFA. So I was laid off, I think, the week before Thanksgiving, and I was back at work by the first week in January. That's pretty amazing. Okay. However, this was in 2009, and if you all, you may be too young to remember, but the economy was kind of tanking at the time. And I went, okay, I've never worked for a nonprofit before. I'm not really sure. I don't know who my boss, like the board of directors, this is who I report to. And I worked at a place where you charge people money for a service you provide. And now I'm working for a place where people give you money just because it makes them feel good about what we're doing. Okay, God. All right. You got this.
It's got to be a different change. And that's something we've often wondered about, you know, because obviously the economy is not going to stay great forever.
Right.
And we're curious of how people are going to work through those times whenever they do come, and how was that coming out of it? Was not that it was right at the start of it, because that's what started the stuff I was speaking on earlier with my family, is that collapse in my dad's business. I often wonder how nonprofits make it through that, and if donations fluctuate, you know.
They do. And we fared pretty well during those first few years when the economy was, you know, not in a great space. And we've done very well for 12 years, short of we've had one really bad year. Back in about 2014, 2015. And I will tell you that I think a lot of nonprofits experience this, because I believe that nonprofits are staffed with people that are passionate about the work they're doing and really want to help other people. And so what they do is they see a need, and they want to start to try and address that need. And we were doing that here at RIFA. It's called mission drift. It has a term. And we were drifting. We were doing a lot of things, trying to help a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And we had spread ourselves very thin. And then we had a bad year. And it hit pretty hard. And so we had many conversations, many meetings, many tears were shed. And some very tough decisions had to be made. And we decided to let go of some of the things that we were doing and to focus on what we knew we did best, and that was fight hunger. So, again, this was back in 2015, if I remember correctly. We had to let go of some of the programs and ministries that we had. We had to let go of some of the people that worked here. But we felt like, I mean, it was necessary to survive, because we were having, you know, we saw a decrease in donations that year. But what we have found is that God has really blessed that decision, and we are now able to, which you will see whenever we look at these numbers, we are able to just serve more people and feed more people and provide more services when it comes to fighting hunger. So now we see that. Yeah. It was hard to see back then.
Amen.
Yeah. Well, I've seen a demonstration in a sermon that I watched just a few days ago, and he was talking about how, you know, once you identify your target, it's like you take a tennis ball that you've covered in paint and you throw it and you hit your target, and although you do hit your target, that paint splatters and it hits all the other people, and you kind of get everybody else in the process. So that's kind of like what you're saying. Once you identify your target, you can actually really impact lives at a greater scale, because you know what you're trying to do, and you get everybody along the way that's involved in that person's life, because they see, okay, they're helping my family member, they're helping this, and you start drawing them in too, and they maybe want to come help and volunteer, kind of like with what I was saying with my dad. I've seen him go through homelessness, and then places like this truly touch my heart, because they're reaching out to those people that are in need when maybe their family can't help them. And maybe they're ashamed to go to their family, but they know that this place they can come to.
Absolutely.
So. And Dan, what's your story?
I'll give you the cliff notes.
All right.
Well, I had 30 years of sales and sales management experience, although I'd always been very active in ministries in my church. When I was younger, I worked with youth groups. Then as I got older and couldn't connect with kids anymore, then I worked in a mission in the churches that I went to. So God had always given me that heart, but I had never, ever pursued it in terms of a work. Mm-hmm. I felt Him calling me to the kitchen. I was in charge of missions at my church, and part of that was our church served a week in the soup kitchen, and I was just absolutely loved it. And not too long after that, I felt God calling me to apply for a job. The kitchen manager at that time actually died at RIFA. He had a heart attack and died, Reverend Don Daniels. And so I said, okay, God, I'm going to follow you. So I went to see Donna Vickers, who was the director. She didn't know why I was there. I said, Donna, what are you going to do about a soup kitchen manager? She said, well, actually, today, a young man from California with a culinary degree and a passionate Christian just came in, and I hired him on the spot. I said, okay, great. So I walk out, and I'm like, okay, God, I got my wires crossed here. What's up with this? You know, and so I kept volunteering at the kitchen because I liked it, and became friends with that young man. And he let me know, he said, this isn't for me. And a little less than a year, he said, I'm going to get out of this. So I said, okay, I got my wires crossed last time. Okay, God, and what am I supposed to do? And I went to my spiritual mentors, and they both said, are you crazy? You've never cooked a commercial meal in your life. You sure haven't preached. You're not qualified for this. And you'll make less money you've ever made in your life. I think you need to pass. And so God would not leave me alone. And so finally I said, okay, God, I'm not qualified. She's not going to hire me. So get you off my back. I'm going to go see her. So I went to see Donna, and she hired me on the spot.
Wow.
And so I walked in day one with my little weekly planner of what we're going to have each day. And they laughed at me. They said, you can't do that. I said, why not? I said, well, you don't know what food God's going to send. So you just have to do it one day at a time. And I went, uh-oh. fear jumped all over me. as you can imagine. And I'm like, okay, God, I'm supposed to do, I think at that time, 50,000 meals a year and not know where the food's coming from. Yep. So I said, well, I'm not sure I can do this. I mean, you know, I wanted the tangible to know it was there, mm-hmm. you know, and he was, I'm not going to give you that. Mm-hmm. So he taught me to trust him. He had to do a lot of changing and growing in me, yeah. But he did. And, you know, I've never had a job that I love as much as this job. You know, I get to see God in ways that most people read about in guideposts, and I get a front row seat to see it. I mean, how cool is that? Mm. So that started me in the kitchen for 6.5 years. When I got too old for that, they booted me out and moved me up here to be the volunteer coordinator. So,
oh, wow. That's a beautiful story.
I'm trying to remember what you said that it triggered a thought that I had, but it was, I think it was along the lines of you talking about being unqualified, but in less pay. You know, I've had many people in the course of like just the past 6 months as I've been trying to open up and express my heart to people, like how I felt led towards this. And I have many people come, it's like, how are you going to make money doing that? Mm-hmm. Or how will you ever feed your family? I was like, I've been trying to express to people, you know, God, if it's what he has for you, he will provide. Mm-hmm. I said, I don't have to know the way, but I've had many offers of like people to help pay for me to go get my contractor's license. And I'm like, I just have this peace that's over me that's like, I don't have to do that. You know, a 25-year-old, somebody's offering to, for me to pay to go get my license. Most people look at me like, are you crazy? But it's, yeah. There's just this peace that God can give you in these moments that you know if you just trust and lean on him, he will mm-hmm. provide for it, you know. Mm-hmm.
Where his finger points, his hand always provides.
Right. Right. And just like in your story, he's not giving us the answers. He's shining a light a little bit in front of each step.
One step.
But he's not showing us the end of the
whole
tunnel.
Staircase.
yeah. No. So it's kind of, you know, we're experiencing that, and, you know, it's, I'm beginning to appreciate it because I don't want to know what's ahead of me, because if I did, then what would be the point of getting there? Hmm. I want to, you know, the surprise is what's so amazing about it.
Just embracing the journey yeah. along the way.
Being from Jackson, we are familiar with RIFA and with what RIFA does. A lot of the churches and the businesses and the community around here help donate to RIFA. Mm-hmm. So what are some volunteer opportunities that y'all offer, and how can people get involved with that?
Well, to get involved, you certainly just go to our website and click on volunteering, and you'll see volunteer applications, youth waiver forms, if that's applicable. You can print them right from our website and submit those. And the volunteer opportunities are numerous. Every ministry we have is really dependent upon volunteers. Our staff is very, very small. Last year there were 25,126 volunteer hours here, which is the equivalent, I think, of, Sean and I figured it up, 9.5 full-time employees, or was it 13? Wow. 12.8, that's what it was, 12.8 full-time employees. Wow. Like I said, the ministries, the opportunities are there. Of course, the soup kitchen is available every single day of the year and two nights a week. The snack backpack program needs people to help make them, to help deliver them. We need volunteers to make senior staple boxes. We need the thrift store is always in need of volunteers. We need volunteers to make food sacks for families. We need volunteers to sort food. We need volunteers to help load in the food bank. We need volunteers in the summer with the bus stop cafe. So we have opportunities. Whatever time frame you can give is great. Some people say, well, I can only give an hour. Well, that's great. Mm-hmm. You can do a lot in an hour.
Yeah.
We have an opportunity every single day of the year for someone who wants to get involved.
I always encourage people to consider coming to take a tour. Yep. So that they can see firsthand everything that's going on here, because there's so many different things right. going on. And then that way they can let us know where they want to get plugged in. So
I don't like to, people always ask me, where do you need me? Mm. I don't like to do that. I want people to work in an area that they like, that they're passionate about. And if I start just assigning people and they don't like what they're doing and they're not passionate about it, they don't come back.
Right.
So I would rather God direct them to where he wants them, and it works better for everyone.
Yeah. I believe a lot of people can find their calling through volunteering, mm-hmm. Because through volunteering, and you get a feel for a lot of things. You're not investing a lot of money into it. I mean, mm-hmm. you're investing nothing at all besides your time, but you get exposure to all these different outlets. Mm-hmm. And just like in Rainbow Riding Academy, that gives you exposure to the physical therapy stuff in it, to the equestrian side. Mm-hmm. And here, I was amazed at the ministries that y'all offer here.
My wife is what he was to attest to what he was talking about. She was torn in schooling. You know, she at first she thought she was going to be an optometrist, and then she was like, well, I kind of more like the therapy setting, you know. And then she started volunteering at the Rainbow Riding Academy, and she knew what occupational therapy was, and she started job shadowing for that, and she job shadowed physical therapy, and through volunteering there and her job shadowing, she found that her true calling in life was occupational therapy. And
that's so it helped to give her some clarity.
And
that's
just shows what to attest what he's saying. You know, if you get involved and you donate your time at these organizations, God can show you your true calling in life.
Mm-hmm.
Most people, or a lot of people, think that we're just a soup kitchen and maybe mm-hmm. a snack backpack. And because those are our most visible ministries.
Right.
But once they come here, and we give them a tour, and they see the different ministries. The thing we hear often is, "I had no idea."
No idea.
Yeah, we hear that often.
The thrift shop is what kind of threw me off, because in the back I saw that y'all had merchandise, and it wasn't just food related. And I was
right.
Like, what is this? And then you brought us out front, I'm like, oh, this is a really nice thrift shop. So
that's the only non-hunger. I mean. Truly non-hunger fighting ministry that we have. However, that thrift store serves so many purposes because, I mean, it's open to the public. So anybody from anywhere can come shop, but it's obviously targeted towards the local neighborhood. Mm-hmm. People who might not have transportation to get to Walmart or Target, or people who might not have the financial means to shop at Walmart or Target. And so we make things available that have been donated by the community. So, you know, say you've had a garage sale and the last thing you want to do is, you know, go store that stuff mm-hmm. that you didn't sell. You can donate it and it stays here at a local level. We make it available to people, like I said, who can't afford to shop at Target or wherever. It generates revenue that we are then able to put back into the other ministries that you've seen today. Plus, we also do a lot of vouchers. I think last year we did about $45,000 worth of vouchers. So $45,000 worth of items from the thrift store were just given away.
Wow.
So people that come into the front office can meet with our social worker, and she can write out a voucher so that they can go in and pick out what they need or what they like. So
it's like what Dan was saying earlier when he was giving the tour, that kind of gives them a sense of dignity. Mm-hmm. Is it that, mm-hmm. because they feel like they're actually purchasing something.
Right. Instead of us just handing them a coat, they can go and shop for one in the color that they like or the style that they like.
What's the hours of operation for that?
It's open Monday through Saturday from 9 to 5.
Okay.
And that really opens my mind up to whenever I have something to donate, and mm-hmm. instead of going to these larger corporations, mm-hmm. which they serve their own good, but it goes back to that
local,
give local, buy local, give local. And so, you know, I'm going to keep that in mind whenever I have something to donate, to look
Thank
for
you.
Something that's local, whether if I'm, you know, home in Memphis or, you know, here in Jackson.
Absolutely.
Would you, either one of you, want to elaborate more on the other ministries that you offer, so to say, like the backpacks or the just anything in general? Just elaborate more on it so people know.
Go, Dan, and I'll jump in and interrupt when I feel necessary.
pull it up a little bit. Yeah.
Snack Backpack was started, I think it was 14 years ago, when a school reached out to RIFA and said, we have kids coming in on Monday hungry, can you help? And RIFA did some research. We knew this wasn't unique just to RIFA, and found the Snack Backpack program. So we started with one school and 25 kids. And from there, it has grown to 14 elementary schools. And this year, we're currently servicing about 1,250 kids a week, 42 weeks a year. So it's a huge endeavor. It's a huge ministry. And as I told you earlier, we put a Bible verse in every one of those.
So this is the only ministry that, this is probably the most expensive ministry that we run, because this is a very grassroots organization, and it's heavily supported by the local community, but there are very specific food items that go into those snack backpacks. We don't just put whatever has been donated. We have food items that have been identified by Dr. Amy Elizer, nutritious, easy prep, low prep, no prep, because they're going home with elementary school children. So because we've grown from 25 kids to 1,200 kids, we've got to buy a lot of that food. So it's a very expensive program for us.
And are those meals more focused towards the students?
Mm-hmm.
And these are after school meals. And so they
weekend.
So they get breakfast and lunch at school. Mm-hmm. And then obviously we know, based on what teachers and counselors tell us, that these are kids that are going home on Friday who may very well go home to little or no food at all in their homes for Saturday and Sunday. And so this is just a way that we're trying to bridge that gap between their lunch on Friday and their breakfast on Monday.
Okay.
And so that led us to a ministry we started last summer, the Bus Stop Cafe, because we knew that just because school's out, the need doesn't go away. Actually, the need is greater because the kids lose that nutrition they were getting at school.
Right.
But we lost our distribution point. And so other people were doing a similar type ministry, so we didn't reinvent the wheel. And we bought an old school bus and took out all the seats, put in countertops and stools. And the Bus Stop Cafe goes out 5 days a week. To areas that we've identified that have a high density of kids in need. And the kids actually come on the bus and eat meals on the bus, and they too would get snack backpacks on Friday. So snack backpack is really a year-round program. We also service three Boys and Girls Clubs and the Hub Club Ministry in the summertime with snack backpacks. So it's not just, it's really year-round.
Oh, wow.
So that kind of encompasses snack backpack. You want to jump in on
I'm going to throw a shout out to Fellowship Bible Church on the bus, because they're actually the ones that took the bus and totally gutted it and renovated the inside of the bus at no cost to us.
Amen.
So,
wow.
Yeah, Randy Pearson led that effort. And that's right down his alley. He loves to do stuff like that. Yeah.
We sat down and spoke with him for probably close to an hour.
Yeah.
And he just says that, his calling, but and he's the one that kind of, in funny story with that, he actually gave us the name of Lindsay, and I called, and if you call RIFA and ask to speak with somebody, you get a directory and it goes through there, and Lisa's name came up, and I was like, that sounds right. And so I typed that, and she calls back and says, hey, I'm the executive director of RIFA. I said, oh, okay.
Yeah, I was sitting next to him whenever you called, and he was like, the guy was like, I don't think I was supposed to talk to the director, but I just talked to the director. I was like,
yes, you
were. I would have anyways, though. So
just a regular person.
Just God's hand in that.
Absolutely.
A funny story.
So, okay, so another extension of the Snack Backpack Program are the school food pantries that we've talked about that were a part of our strategic plan. So, here at a local level, a couple of school superintendents ago, there was a strategic plan that they called Vision 2020. And what that encompassed was basically looking at all the schools in our city and assessing the schools. And ultimately what happened is some of the schools were closed and some of the schools were merged together. And so where that landed was that you now had, in some cases, you had middle school children in the same building as elementary school children. And so obviously we were serving the elementary school children with the Snack Backpack Program, but we know through research that snack backpacks are not appropriate for middle school age children. And so we, part of our strategic plan was to establish school food pantries into anywhere that there were middle school students that needed a school food pantry. And as we were talking about earlier, we thought that we would go about this in a very methodical way, because we want our efforts to be sustainable too. Mm-hmm. So we were going to start with middle schools, and then we were going to approach high schools, and then we were going to move on to colleges until all schools that needed a school food pantry were served. but God had a slightly other plan. We did start with middle schools, actually, and we established a couple of middle school food pantries. But back this past summer, through a connection that was made at Lane College to one of our board members, we helped Lane College to establish a school food pantry on their campus. And that got some media attention. And so what resulted was several other schools reaching out to us, colleges and high schools, and we now have school food pantries. We have helped to establish school food pantries at Lane College, Jackson State Community College, University of Memphis, Lambeth Campus, Northside High School, and Southside High School, all since this summer. So we just saw a really rapid growth in that particular ministry since the summer. So we're working on that. And what else? We've talked about, did you talk about the soup kitchen?
No, I'll be glad to talk about it.
Since you used to work back there.
The soup kitchen is open 365 days a year. I know for a fact we have not missed a day in over 11 years. And it's also two meals during the night on Mondays and Thursday nights. Kitchen normally opens at 6:30, and so we have a breakfast and we have a lunch. Before each lunch meal, we have a worship service in our chapel. And some things that people don't realize that go on in that soup kitchen is across from our chapel, we have a laundry room with two washers, two dryers. If anyone who comes in needs to wash their clothes, they make an appointment. We give them a slip for it, and that way we give them detergent to wash their clothes. We also have a wheelchair-accessible showers in both the restrooms in the kitchen. So if you need to shower, make an appointment. We give you towel, bath cloth, soap, shampoo, razor, whatever you need to clean yourself up. So it's much more than a soup kitchen. And I have seen far more people saved in our little chapel than I have in my church that sits out on the bypass.
Right.
Wow. So, you know, that is the ultimate right there. But it's an incredible place. People, instant gratification. You know, sometimes if you're on the streets and you see a homeless person, you don't want to make eye contact because you're afraid if you do, they're going to ask you for money. And if you give them money, you don't know if they're going to go to the Barrel or the Burger King. Mm-hmm. But we don't have that barrier in the kitchen. And so it's very much an instant gratification ministry. There's over 1,000 volunteers a year that come through that kitchen. So it was 86,000 meals last year, and we have two paid people, one during the week and one on the weekend. So that tells you how much volunteerism there is in that ministry. So it's an incredible place.
Wow. We also just recently hired a social worker that works specifically in the soup kitchen to establish relationships with the patrons to kind of get a feel for what needs they have. I know she's helped them to, you know, get documents that they need, identification, fill out paperwork. She's helped some of them with job applications, transportation needs, because that was just not, as Dan said, there's only one paid staff person, and her job, her hands are full just trying to prepare the meal and manage the volunteers. So she did not really have the time to, you know, build relationships with mm-hmm. the clients in a, you know, at a deep level. And so this social worker that we've brought on board has done some amazing work in the time that she's been here, helping the patrons, you know, with whatever their needs are, connecting them to what resources they may have. So we're excited about that.
Is that, I saw that's fairly new.
Like, she's been here for probably maybe about 6 months.
Okay. Well, yeah. I was wondering if there was a way that y'all could go about really advertising that to those people, because just knowing from just even other people that don't come here, uh-huh. Because there's a lot of people that make excuses out of those circumstances,
right?
That, you know,
well, we have another social worker. So if you're not a regular patron of the kitchen, then you would not necessarily encounter Jerry, who is our social worker in the back. But we have another social worker that's up here in the front side of the building that anybody can come and sit down and meet with as well. So
are there any other ministries that
how many
total do y'all have?
I don't know.
Do y'all have another?
Let me talk about Senior Staples. That's a ministry that a lot of people aren't aware of, that we used to do, and I'm not sure why we got away from it. It's probably when we had that mission drift, but we restarted this this ministry 3-4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, something like that. And it's been 5 times a year, once a quarter and then twice during the holidays in November and December. And we wanted to expand that ministry because as we reached out to the other counties around us, every senior center we encountered said they had a need. But we didn't want to do so until we had a sustainable supply of food to meet that. Worst thing you can do is start a ministry and then go, whoops, can't do it. So we now have that, and we will be expanding this ministry this year very soon. But we're currently servicing the Veterans Center in Henderson County, which is in Lexington, the Senior Center in Lexington. There's a Foster Grandparents Association in Chester County in Henderson that reaches out to several counties. As you're probably aware, there are many grandparents who are raising kids now, and a lot of times they're on a fixed income, and you throw a couple of teenagers eating in there, and it makes it tight.
Trouble.
Yeah, so we service them as well, and of course the one here in Madison County, which would be in Denmark, West Madison Senior Center. But we will be, like I said, we want to rotate around and reach other ones as we try to expand. We will expand this ministry to once a month. And our food boxes are very nice. They run anywhere from 30 to 34 pounds each. And so we're excited to have the opportunity to expand this because seniors are very much overlooked in terms of need, and there's a lot of need out there. So we know the need is there, and God has given us the way to meet that need, and we're going to expand it.
With it being January now, y'all are recovering from a holiday season, so do y'all want to talk about the ministries that y'all offer during November and December?
Wow. In addition to our normal workload, in November and December, we did about 800 or it may have been 850, I don't remember, holiday food sacks.
Let me interrupt you just to give a little background. So our local United Way has something during the holidays called Christmas Partners, where several nonprofits in the community work together to provide things like Dan's about to talk about to people during the Christmas holiday. So we actually collaborate and partner with the United Way. We also work with the Salvation Army to reach out to the people that he's saying we provided all these food bags for, holiday meals for.
Yes. So the what's their program called? Angel Tree?
Angel Tree. Yeah, that's the Salvation Army.
So they get the toys and we provide the food.
Okay.
And so it's a we work
collaborative
together. Thank you. We work together. And then we have our own list here that we also serve. So that's I can't remember if it's 800 850, but it's a lot of bags in November and December. And then of course we do the senior staples twice, and so we did over 334 pound boxes in November and December for the seniors as well.
Wow.
There's a lot.
that other, was it the family backpacks? Is that what you called it earlier?
Family food sacks.
Family food sacks. Mm-hmm. You were talking about that and the need, how you'd like to have a Bible that you put in each one of those. If you want to talk about that and then talk about the need for that.
Yeah, we have anywhere from 1,800 to 2,500 families who come here who need food assistance. And each one of the dry goods sacks, I would like to put a Bible in every one, but I just don't have enough Bibles, so we use Daily Bread's Upper Rooms. I use leftover Sunday school lessons, whatever I can get. But I would love to have a Bible to put in every one of them. So, you know, we're very conscious of meeting the physical needs, but the greatest need any human being will ever have is to know Jesus Christ, not just know about him, but to know him. Mm-hmm. And to ignore that need is to ignore the greatest need that any human would ever have. So we're very conscious of trying to meet that need. That's why we put the Bible verses in Snack Backpack. We're aware that some of these kids may be unchurched. You know, if we don't tell them about Jesus, how are they going to know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So we're,
which is why it's part of our mission statement,
absolutely,
which is to reach out with the love of Christ to help people in need by providing both physical and spiritual nourishment.
And so we try to do that wherever we can in every ministry we have.
During the tour, we asked you how many Bibles it would take to completely fill. And what was that number again?
2,000.
2,000 Bibles in a year.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a large number, but, you know, if for y'all, you know, having all the other financial responsibilities as you have. So, well,
if anybody listening wants to donate, here's your chance.
Please. Yeah.
That's a good role for a church to take up.
Sure.
Whenever I was at Martin, there was a ministry that actually handed out those little New Testament Bibles.
Mm-hmm.
I can't recall what that ministry is.
Gideon.
Yeah. So, you know, that would be something cool to, you know, reach out to.
Just throwing it out there.
Yeah. You know, one thing I have learned through that, if you speak it into existence, you know, it will come about. Mm-hmm. So,
Lisa, why don't you talk about the growth that we've seen over the last 2 or 3 years?
Wow. Good idea, Dan. Yeah, so every year we put out these infographics that we call it, because it's just an easy way to digest the totality of the impact that we're having in the community. So this is kind of fresh off the press. We don't even have them printed up yet. In 2019, through all these different programs and ministries that we've just been talking about, RIFA distributed 518,136 meals through all those different programs and ministries. When you convert that, what I did was just divide it by 365. That's on average, there's over 1,400 meals that are being distributed out through these doors every day of the year.
Wow.
That's huge.
Yes.
Last year, so this year, in 2019, I'm sorry, was 518,000. The year before was 497,578. And the year before that was 430,000. So I'm going backwards, but you can see that there's been a growth every year, which is not really a great thing necessarily. I think we were talking about some workshop I was in the other day, talking about the goal of any nonprofit is to put yourself out of business, to solve the issue that you're working to address. Unfortunately, I think that the poor will, or the Bible tells us that the poor will always be among us. And I know that what we see with a lot of the people that we serve are a lot of people with mental health issues, a lot of people with substance abuse issues, sometimes co-occurring. A lot of that is related to things that they have experienced in their past. And that's not our expertise. Mm. So if we, you know, if the experts in the field can solve the substance abuse crisis, and you know that there's better mental health services for people, then maybe one day we'll be out of business, and that's okay. But until then, you know, we know that we're going to be around to provide.
And it's a blessing that you do have it. I get what you're saying, but it's a blessing that you do have the means to feed that many people.
Right.
So.
Thanks to the community.
Amen.
The community. This is a very, very grassroots supported organization. So,
and it's heartwarming to know that just out of this organization, I know there's more beyond this building, but that you're able to do that out of this location here in Jackson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's pretty amazing.
One thing that you showed us out back is your the community garden, if you wanted to discuss a little bit about that.
Yeah, the community garden, we're not through updating it, but it looks a lot better than it used to. That is not primarily, it's all the way taken care of by volunteers. And it is not really for, people think it's for the soup kitchen. It's really not. They may get a handful of peppers or something every now and then, but the vast majority of the food raised in there is from the people that live around here. And so they benefit greatly from it and appreciate it. And the volunteers absolutely love it.
Hmm. Is there one downtown too?
I've seen multiple in the community back behind.
There was
here.
A
community has one, don't they?
That, community that, cafe yeah. has yeah. one. That is
that's
correct.
The one.
They do have one,
but I think it's for
their kitchen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, there's one. I don't want to lie on the street name, but there's one that's like 2-3 blocks over between.
They have a sign up for it, but I've never seen anything planted there.
A few years ago, there was a group of people that were working really hard to establish community gardens throughout the city, and we were a part of that conversation. I'm not even sure we had that lot. I don't know if that lot had been donated to us. The lot where our community garden is was actually donated to us. And I just don't know that it ever got a lot of traction. And I think it's... You know, in your head, it's nice to talk about a community garden, but when it's July and it's 95 degrees and you need to go weed it, you know, then the interest kind of wanes a little bit sometimes.
I love the idea of it, and it actually adds an aesthetic to the community.
Absolutely.
And the learning factor that comes with it, because, like, I've always wanted to have a garden, but not having the, like, we had the space to do it, but I don't know if our soil wasn't quite fertile. It was more clay, and so it was...
Which is why we have those above ground.
Yeah, and so I would have had to do that and just go into that, like, at a young age, I didn't understand that. And so, like, now, in my past, since going to college, and then from there, so I've moved almost every year. And so having a garden, when you're moving in July, it's not really feasible.
Not conducive, conducive.
When you're moving during the summer, it's not, you know, feasible to have a garden. So if I would have, thinking back, if I would have thought, I was like, hey, I could just go plant at the community garden and, you know, put my time in there.
Which, yeah.
You know.
And you talked about aesthetics, and that's one thing we've tried to do is just make this little corner of our neighborhood a little more beautiful for the people, particularly for the people we serve. So I don't know if you've seen the murals that we have on that side of the building. Okay.
That's what I like about Rifa. And it's one thing that kind of whenever I see Rifa, I think about it. So different colors that y'all use and with the bus out front and, and
bright
and your logo.
And cheery and uplifting. Yeah. So yeah, we've got some murals with, you know, what we feel like are some inspirational messages, hopefully to speak to, you know, maybe not just the people we serve, but the volunteers that come. And like Dan said, our garden, we're 1 year into a renovation, but last October, we have the same mural artist that comes and does all the murals for us. And she did the one at the garden last year. And so we've kind of got a vision to make a space for them, for the people we serve, to have a place to go to kind of hang out. We might do like a sunshade patio, and when the trees get a little bit bigger, you know, putting some tables and benches out there. So just to give them a, you know, a nice place to hang out.
Yeah. You know? It'd be nice one day to see a community greenhouse so you can plant all year round, but, you know, those are expensive.
You want to volunteer for that?
That would be nice. It gives you something to do and something to do with your hands and be involved with. Yeah. Are there any other ministries that y'all offer that y'all want to discuss on this podcast?
Let's see if we've covered everything we've talked about. Well, we didn't talk about the food bank, did we?
No, we didn't.
So, we do have a small independent food bank where we distribute food to other nonprofits in our community, in Madison County, and in all counties that touch Madison County. And so if I'll use Youth Town for an example. So Youth Town works with at-risk teen boys. They're a 501c3, so they can come to RIFA and receive food through our food bank to take back to their organization to serve the boys that they're working with. So the food bank actually, you know, our footprint is a little larger when it comes to the food bank. And then let me see if there's anything else. You talked about family food sacks, which is what I call community outreach. And we do another, I guess, strategic direction that we're trying to head. So if you are a family or an individual that's struggling with food insecurity, as Dan said, you can come here and receive food through that community outreach. But we've also started two food co-ops in our community. One meets here at RIFA, one meets at a local church. And a food co-op, there's a place in Atlanta that does this and has done it very successfully for many years. And so we sent a couple of our folks down there to train. A food co-op is, it's a way to build community amongst the people that we're serving, just like the community that exists in the kitchen. You know, the people that come to the kitchen, really are a community that support one another. So a food co-op is a small group of people, usually about 10 in number. They meet twice a month. They actually do pay a small membership fee, which they determine what that fee is. And I think it's usually about $3 or $4. And then they pay a fee every time that they meet. Again, $2, $3, $4. The money is not RIFA's. The money is theirs. We hold it in a separate account for them, and then they decide what they want to do with that money. For example, the group that meets here, I know at Christmas time has put together like little hygiene packs to give out to the folks in the soup kitchen. But these are people that are struggling with food insecurity. And so they come here, like I said, they come twice a month. They have a meeting. Everybody in that group has a job assignment, whether they sign the other members in, or they're the treasurer, or they help pick out the food that's going to be distributed. Everybody has a role to play. And again, helps to build a sense of community amongst those that are members. We have speakers that come in. They really tell us what they want. So they may have a speaker that comes in and talks to them about, you know, how to cook on a budget, or how to shop on a budget, or, you know, how to cook for diabetes and things like that. And then when they leave at the end of those meetings, they leave with about a third to a half of the food that they need for the month. So this is really a direction that we want to head, and we want to establish more food co-ops in the future. The two that have been meeting for the last couple of years, I think, are very successful. And then also we have a vision to establish a choice food pantry, wherein instead of when people come in the front door and say that they need food, instead of just handing them food, having a choice food pantry so that they can go and pick out the food that they want or need for their family. So lots of food related things happening.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's a unique need. And as the thought came earlier, it's in nonprofits, you have, it's kind of, if you're being successful, that's not really a good thing. So that's kind of, you know, like you said, you would rather be at zero and be bankrupt. Than not at all.
You want to be successful in your task at hand, but then if the task is no longer needed, then that's your ultimate goal.
Great.
What I was wanting to move into next, if we didn't have anything else to talk about, would be the fundraisers.
Okay. So we have quite a few fundraisers throughout the year. And again, like I said, we're very grassroots and community supported.
Let me jump in here for a second.
Uh-huh.
I've got to go, guys. I've got snack backpacks I've got to get delivered. But
Lisa
can handle this. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
So back to fundraisers. We've got a couple of fundraisers throughout the year. Let's see. We have Super Bowl of Caring, which is on Super Bowl Sunday. We have, I'm trying to think right off the top of my head, we have a volunteer appreciation event. We have a donor appreciation event called Empty Bowls. But I think probably the best thing to talk about briefly would be our signature fundraiser, which is Canstruction.
Yeah. One I'm sure anybody in Jackson would be familiar with. Yeah,
hopefully.
I remember doing that in elementary school, donating the cans.
Hopefully. So we actually had a board member that, this is pre-me, because we just celebrated our 15th anniversary of Canstruction. A board member by the name of Franny Smith came to the board with this idea, and I'm not exactly sure where she saw it, if she saw it online or on TV. But anyway, Canstruction was actually started in New York City by the AIA, the American Institute of Architects, whatever AIA stands for. And I mean, I can't think of a better fit for an organization whose mission is to fight hunger. So essentially what Canstruction is finding teams within your community, and those teams can come from businesses, churches, schools, people that are willing to put a team of people together. And it helps to have somebody with like a little architectural know-how or a little engineering know-how, but that's not a requirement. We've even had like a brownie troupe put something together.
Oh, wow.
They're willing to come together as a team, design and build a structure. And these are like pretty massive structures, like 10 by 10, some of them, 10 feet by 10 feet. Build structures made entirely out of canned food and other non-perishable food items. And they can be pretty amazing pieces of art. So for many years, we did this at the mall, at our local mall, Old Hickory Mall. And then we had, and it is a competition, so any team that is putting a structure together, they will be judged, and then there are awards given out. So for many years, we had it at the mall, and then we would have a little awards luncheon downtown at a church, and that was pretty much it. I just saw a lot more potential in that, and so in year 10, We took a leap of faith because we had no idea what we were doing. And we went from the mall to the Civic Center, and we added the whole dinner banquet component piece to it. Excuse me. And so now the teams that we put together, the teams that volunteer to do this, actually build the structures out inside the Civic Center, typically on a Tuesday. And then on Wednesday, we have a team of judges that come in and decide which structure gets which award. And then on Thursday evening of every year, we have, you know, a full-fledged dinner inside the Civic Center. We give awards to the teams, and then we knew that we needed to add another piece to that. And so we typically, historically, have had a contemporary Christian artist come and perform. Wow. So we've had Michael W. Smith and Stephen Curtis Chapman and Natalie Grant. This past year was our 15th anniversary, and so we decided to do something a little bit different, and we had a Christian comedian come, and we had Shonda Pierce.
I've heard of her.
She's pretty funny. And so it's been very successful. We have typically somewhere around 1,000 people in the building, and some of these are RIFA supporters, and some of these are friends of RIFA supporters, so it's been a great way to increase awareness about the work that we're doing and make new RIFA support, you know, hopefully have new RIFA supporters come out of that. And it's a lot of work. We pretty much work on it year-round. Lindsay Dawkins is our marketing and events person, and so this event takes place in at the very end of September every year. And we, you know, kind of debrief in the month of October, and we might, you know, not think too much about it in November and December, but we're right now in the process of finalizing who's going to come for 2020. So
wow.
It's something we work on pretty much year round. So,
yeah, I think my first exposure was probably through my school, elementary school or whatever, and bring in your cans, and, and they would have their group, and so it's
very unique, and like I said, I can't think of a better fit for us. So I'm just very thankful that Franny Smith is actually the board member. And when we decided to take the jump from the mall to the Civic Center, I went to Franny and I said, I can't and I won't do this without your help and your support. And so she's kind of been our honorary chair every year since then. So,
wow.
Shout out to Franny. Yes.
And I always enjoy seeing the pictures online. I've never got the chance to be at one. Yeah. We might try to do that this year.
You should.
But it's always cool to see the pictures online and how people come up with that.
Yeah. If anybody's interested, they can go to like the Canstruction website and see some of the structures. This is actually an international competition. It takes place in cities all around the world. So for something like that to be happening right here in little old Jackson, and I think in 2018, I can't remember the number, but I think we were in the top 25 in of all the cities in the world. Jackson, Tennessee made it into the top 25 for the amount of food that was raised and the amount of dollars that were raised, if you can believe that.
That's insane.
Wow. Pretty impressive.
Are there any other active fundraisers that y'all do that y'all found successful for your individual need?
Well, yeah. Okay. So I was a little rusty when you first asked me that question. We do an event at the end of the summer called Pack the Bus, where we started with one location and we borrowed one school bus from the school system, parked it in between Sam's and Walmart North on the north side of town. This has probably been 5 or 6 years ago. And just asked people. We had volunteers with flyers that had the list of snack backpack food items on it, and just asked people to consider purchasing some of those items when they went in to do their shopping at Sam's or Walmart, with the ultimate goal to be to fill the school bus full of snack backpack food items. We are now up to, I think, 5 locations and 5 school buses that are parked all around the city, usually on the hottest day in August, for sure. And so it takes a ton of volunteers, because we have volunteers that have to be at the bus, volunteers that are at the doors to the Krogers and the Walmarts around the city. And that has been very successful to raise quite a bit of food And in year one, we didn't realize that some people were just going to hand us money. I actually had to go inside Walmart and buy a container to put the cash in because I wasn't thinking people were going to give us money.
Right.
So we actually raised some some financial revenue from that and a lot of food. And then, like I said, I think we've been doing that for about 5 or 6 years. And then a couple of years ago, we tagged on another piece to that. It's called our Bus Banks Fundraiser. And so we have these little tiny cardboard yellow buses that are banks, and we distribute them around the city, typically to churches, and the churches make them available to their congregation. Kind of like Birth Choice's baby bottle campaign, where they give out, you know, empty baby bottles at Mother's Day and take them back on Father's Day. But we do this in like during back to school time, and just again, typically they go primarily out to churches. They make them available to their congregation, and then, you know, they can take them the little bus home with them and fill it up with change and bring that back, you know, like a month later. So that's a very successful campaign that we have as well.
One other kind of question we would have is, what would be some of your future milestones? I know you've mentioned some of the things over the course of the podcast, but what's some things that are really tangible goals that you're shooting for maybe this year in the next 5 years?
Well, actually, our strategic planning team is about to get together on Friday, and so we'll be looking ahead to the future. But, you know, I think anything for us, it's all about growing and providing more food to people who need. Now, whether that's adding another school food pantry, or I've even had a donor approach me about the possibility of purchasing another bus to make another bus stop cafe. But he came to me back in the summer when it was year one for the current bus. And I didn't want to say yes, because again, we're all about
the need.
Well, no, we know the need is there. I mean, if we're providing 1,200 snack backpacks during the school year, and you know, we can't reach 1,200 kids with this school bus. We're targeting 4 neighborhoods because we have a window of time that we have to provide lunch, and so we cannot come close to, you know, reaching 1,200 kids. So we know there's a need, but it's, we want to, again, grow in a sustainable way. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to get too excited. And I think that's a very important component is, you know, just make sure that you grow in a methodical and sustainable way. Because like Dan said earlier, the last thing you want to do is start a program or ministry to meet a need, and then you don't have the resources, whether it's financial resources or for us, you know, food or human resources. And then you can't keep it going. You know, so to answer your question, right now it's just wherever there's a need, where there are people that need to be fed, whether that's more senior citizens, more children with another bus, or what, you know, that's what we want to focus on.
Well, if there's anything you could do, like if you could travel back in time and give yourself any advice on, you know, like your process, or even like in the process of working here, what would you tell yourself or tell somebody that's starting an organization similar to this? What's something that you just think's key?
Okay. Two things come to mind. For me, a personal mantra that I have is just do the next right thing, and God will honor that and God will bless that. And I think I said something to you when we talked, you know, I am not the expert on all things RIFA, and we have an amazing staff here, and I believe in giving people the tools that they need to do their job, and then letting them do their job. But they need the tools to do their job. And I am a big believer in getting other people wise counsel, whether that's from the leadership staff that's here. When we sit down, you know, we'll sit down as a leadership group and talk about the strategic goals and visions, or whether that is reaching out to a board member who has expertise in a particular area. Don't ever think you know it all. Right. And don't be afraid to reach out for help from, you know, whether it's, like I said, somebody on the leadership team or somebody that's on your board, you know.
That's what, well, it's kind of, you kind of emphasized or spoke into one of our other questions, and I'm looking for it at the moment, but.
How did a team, you know, how influential was a team in building the process? And
and also, like, how is this is our first time getting to talk in this sort of setting, and we're always curious because, like, we're talking about, we want to set up a 501c eventually. How do you go about getting that board and these teams that you're talking about? Like, how are they influential? Because obviously they are, and you know, how do you go about structuring and finding those right people? Of course, obviously God will put the right people in your path.
That's huge. In spite of myself, yeah, God. It's amazing to see, for me personally, here at RIFA, it's amazing to me to see how God has assembled such an awesome team. And I mean, it is an amazing thing to watch. You know, there's people here that are just so good at what they do. And I'm so thankful for that. You know, it's really God. I mean, it's really, I mean, obviously we have to do our part. And so I'm just really thankful for all the folks that work here. And we've got people that have been here for years and years and years. Now, sometimes they have to, you know, they move on because other opportunities come up, and that's okay. So we just put the word out there and just kind of wait and see what happens. And it usually works out really well. Now for the board, obviously when I started, there was a board in place, but there are term limits. So, you know, at some point board members do have to roll off. But I also rely on board members very heavily to, you know, good people tend to associate with good people.
Right. That's our idea behind this podcast too.
So if you've got like a really awesome board member, you know, you're going to want to reach out to that board member and say, who do you know that might like to serve on the board? And I always encourage and ask, you know, any potential new board member, even any potential new employee, to come and take a tour. Because if this is not something that you feel passionate about, no harm, no foul. You know, maybe you feel passionate about some other mission, or, you know, you love animals, so you want to be a part of Redemption Road Rescue or saving the animals together. That's okay, you know? So I do try and encourage people to come and take a tour so they can see firsthand what's going on here and help them to decide if this is something they can get behind, if this is something that they feel very passionate about. So,
how many people are on staff here, and do y'all employ?
How many? Okay. So we have a total of 23 people. Many of those are part-time. So we have probably about 12 full-time equivalents. So for example, we have a young lady, well, we have two people that we won't see again until this summer because they're the folks that do the bus stop cafe. So one of them, she drives a school bus for the school system during the school year.
Oh, wow.
But then when she's off during the summer, and the way we even know her is because she brings a group of school kids here to volunteer every day. And that's how we met her. And that's how, you know, God opened the door to talk to her about, is this something you would be interested in doing in the summer months? And she had just recently lost her husband. Again, how God works, you know, she had just recently lost her husband. And this was going to be a great way for her to keep busy during the summer when school's out. And so she drove our school bus in the summer, and she went back to work driving a bus for the school this year, and she'll come back next summer. So, you know, she's a part-time employee that only works 12 weeks out of the year. So 23 total on the payroll, but on any given day, there's usually about 8 or 10 people here.
Wow. Seems like a small number to in a large corporation or organization.
Doing a lot of stuff. But that there again, the volunteers is what makes that possible. I mean, if you think about the number in the kitchen that we averaged in 2019 was 236 meals per day. Okay. That's a lot of
food rolling out.
And we have one paid person back there.
Wow.
The rest of it. So imagine being in your kitchen and being asked to generate 230 meals between 11:30 and 1.
Well, first thing, there wouldn't be enough food in the pantry.
Yeah.
So a lot of that, you know, we rely very heavily on the volunteers. You know, the snack backpacks, 1,200 and whatever he said, 1,260 snack backpacks going out every single week, 42 weeks out of the school year. If you go back there on a Tuesday, You're going to see probably about 50, anywhere from 15 to 20 volunteers that are back there helping to put those together. So
that's fantastic. It really is.
Are there any other bullets that we want before our last question?
Okay. Oh, the last question.
Well, what are some of the challenges that you've experienced in the growth and continuation of this organization?
I mean, obviously, you know, we talked about earlier, you know, we don't charge a fee for any. I mean, we do generate some revenue through the thrift store, and but the rest of it has to be raised, whether that's through fundraisers or donations that come from individuals and churches and businesses or grants. We do have a very diverse revenue stream, but I don't know if I would say it's a challenge, but it's always in the back of my mind that we've got to keep, you know, you got to keep the finances rolling in.
It's hard to plan and budget when you don't have a set amount.
There's a whole lot of faith that comes into play when you do the budget. We can look back at five-year histories and see what the trends are, and we can budget, and we do budget based on history and trends, but there's still, you know, there could be some anomaly, you know, some extremely large donation that is a really great thing, or there could be, like we had back in 2015, a big dip in donations that we didn't see coming, and we've studied and we've analyzed, and we just never really could put our finger on it, you know. We don't have control over that. So again, not really a challenge, but just something that's always in the back of my mind.
what about like a non-monetary standpoint? Is there anything in like the
logistics or
I think that, you know, we're all about fighting hunger, and we've talked about that a lot, but we also, because of the 43 years that we've been in the community, because we have a pretty high profile, because we are, I would say, pretty well known in Jackson, we're the place where a lot of people come that are living on the fringes, that are struggling with whatever, fill in the blank. We're the place where those people come. And, you know, so in addition to fighting hunger, I think the other thing that I feel is an important component of what we do is trying to help those people in whatever way we can. And that could mean connecting them to resources. Mm-hmm. And what was your question? I would know I was headed in the right direction with the answer to this. Non-monetary.
Yeah.
So I think it's just seeing these people struggle and not being able to, like, solve the problem, you know?
Having to hand it over to someone else.
And, you just want to fix. I mean, like people who work for nonprofits.
Oh, I understand. You have that compassion to help people. And you want to help them just get out of that circumstance.
But, exactly. You
know, it's not, but at the same time, it's not our place to fix that if somebody's. We can try to help.
So that's a struggle, you know?
I just got to say, I love doing this. This is the whole time we've been sitting here talking. I'm like, this is one of the greatest things I've ever got to be a part of, is sitting down and talking.
Well, I've really enjoyed hearing your story and hearing your hearts, and I'm very touched by it.
Thank you.
I think you're going to do great things.
That's what it brought us in here. And it's just seeing that the kindness and compassion, and you know, that's what our last question is how has kindness helped shape your story? And is it?
Yeah, that's it. You said it right.
And I think that I can relate the kindness, because we talk a lot about in our staff meetings about oozing love, because we deal with people on a daily basis that a lot of other people don't ever interact with, don't want to interact with. They're afraid of them. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, we deal with people that, like I said, they're just struggling, but they're people too.
Right.
And some of the circumstances that they find themselves in are through poor choices that they've made, but sometimes not. Sometimes they're just people that are struggling, you know, that have had, they're but by the grace of God, go I. And we want to be a place, and I think we are a place, right? It is a place where people know it's a safe place. It's a place where I think they know they're not going to be judged, and that we're going to help them as best we can, you know, even if it's not food, you know, mm-hmm. if it's connecting them to a resource, or, I mean, we didn't even talk about, we do a whole lot of helping people with, maybe they got a job and they need a pair of steel-toed boots, or we have diapers and formula and hygiene items and gas vouchers and bus tickets, and we do put people up in motels from time to time. So there's a whole nother little aspect right. that's non-food related, because there are so many people that are just struggling.
Yeah. I seen this thing the other day, is talking about how there's, it said some number and I can't remember the number, so I'm not even going to try to come up with it, but it was talking about how some people are just, you know, a paycheck or a week away from becoming mm-hmm. homeless because they're financially not stable, and you know, if they lose their job or something lapses and they don't get paid,
exactly,
they can't pay their bills, they get kicked out or something. You
or
know.
They're working a part-time job, you know, they can't find a full-time job because, of course, for a lot of employers, you know, part-time means you don't have mm-hmm. to pay benefits, and so you mm-hmm. have a lot of part-time people, and so they're working a part-time job and they're just trying to stretch their dollars as far as they can. And like you said, one flat tire or one yep. car mm-hmm. repair or one unforeseen medical expense can throw the whole game off, you know.
I saw somewhere it was about the statistics of Americans that are would be able to afford that, and it was like 80% of Americans couldn't, you know, or it was some, I don't want to say it exactly, but it was some larger number that wouldn't be able to pretty much have an emergency fund mm-hmm. to afford a
The United Way yeah. has just put out a report called the ALICE report, which stands for Asset Limited Income Constrained. I forget what the E is for, but if you're interested in learning more about people that are in, I mean, it's numbers for all across Tennessee, every county in Tennessee. It's got some really good information in there about what does it take to, you know, what kind of wages are we looking at mm-hmm. to really live a sustainable life, not just a comfortable life, but it's mm-hmm. pretty eye-opening.
Yeah. So. And I feel, in a sense, compassion towards the people that say they can't find a job, because there was a point just a few years ago, and I look back now and it's God's sovereignty, but I applied to 23 different jobs, or put in 23 applications in a week's time, and I didn't get a single phone call back. And I was young, healthy, able to work, but that was completely discouraging.
Young, healthy, and able to work. Imagine yeah. if you're disabled, if you're mm-hmm. dealing with some sort of mental health issue, maybe you've just come out of prison. I mean, there are a lot of people right. that, you know, you're young, healthy, and able to work, and yep. you didn't get a call back. Yeah.
Or, I mean, he has transportation, and then people who don't have transportation.
Right. That's correct.
That's a... I mean, yeah,
there's a lot of challenges for a lot of people out there yeah. who are trying.
Yeah.
So,
is there anything else that we forgot that you would like to cover in this podcast?
No, I think you've done a pretty comprehensive interview, and like I said, I wish you guys much success.
All right. Thank you. Thank it's been a blessing to sit down and talk. It is every time, yeah. and I just love the growth that we have yeah. in this experience. So,
well, that's RIFA, Regional Interfaith. Association.
You got it.
Located in Jackson. This has been Lisa Tillman. Go check out their, you have a website?
Uh-huh. It's rifajackson.org. And you can follow us on Facebook or Instagram as well.
They have a lot of things going on. God is definitely working in their organization. If you ever have a free time, come check it out. Come volunteer your time. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the K1's Charitable Hearts Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and would like more information, you can find it at k1media.org. You can also find our social media links to stay connected with our social media, read our blog, and suggest content for our next episode. If you enjoy this podcast, support it by purchasing merch through the shop tab, subscribe to our podcast on your platform, and leave a review. Thanks.